it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Time to get to Sal Capaccio as part of our Football Friday. Jeremy and Joe here. Football Friday brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash, call Salino, call the 8s, and by Crosby's Pizza and Subs, Crosby's hometown fuel. Game day ready since 1922. Bills and Jets, Sunday, 1 o'clock. Last time these two teams played in New York, Joe was there.
I was.
And one thing to remember about that game is it was the most penalty-filled affair ever. And Sal, Joe tells the story that Jets fans and Bills fans in the stands were commiserating. Like, can you believe we have to go through this? Comforting each other through the penalties.
Sal, it was the weirdest experience ever, where the beginning of the game, all the Bills and Jets fans, not getting along at all, like, yelling at each other, whatever. And then, by the fourth quarter, we're all, looking at each other, talking like, this game stinks. This is a bad football game. But it was only because of the officiating.
I think there are 25 flags in that game. I'll pull it up just to get the exact number.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that, because generally Bills fans and Jets fans aren't the nicest of company together.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So for that to happen, that's good. What I remember about that game is two things last year. Number one, Ray Davis played and started, and the Bills fed him a lot early on because James Cook did not play in that game. And it was even Frank Gore even dressed, but it was the Bills went right down the field, ran the ball right at the Jets, and just scored on their opening drive. That's one thing I remember. The other is, Joe, you remember this. It was a night game in the middle of the ALCS, maybe it was. And they're showing the Yankees on the big screen.
Yes.
Right? And then and everybody was watching that during the pregame before the lights.
And they would get – wasn't there a moment, Sal, where – because didn't – would they show it also in the game during TV timeouts or something? Because – or maybe it was before the game. At one point, something important was happening in that game, and they shut the feed off right before a pitch or right before something happened. I'm vaguely remembering, fans being
upset. Yes, I believe that was the case. They did. They shut it off right before something happened. It might have been, in fact, I think it, if I remember, it was some sort of wild pitch or something. It was a big play. I'm like, wait, what's going on? And yeah, for sure. But I remember that about the game too. So that was obviously in October.
Yep.
And it was a Monday night game. It was right around the time the Bills would be playing in Atlanta on Monday night this year, actually.
Yeah. 22 penalties in all in that game. The Bills, 11 penalties for 94 yards. The Jets, 11 for 110. That's only the accepted penalties, never mind the decline penalties. There is one other very memorable thing, I think, from that game that no one's mentioned yet. You know what else happened?
Wasn't there? There was a Hail Mary.
Yes.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers to Alan Lazard, Hail Mary at the end of the half.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing the other thing about that game, Sal, I heard you on with Shope and Bulldog yesterday about how these two teams have they've never really been good at the same time, the Bills and Jets. There's never been these big, important games. And this one isn't totally qualifies that because it was early, but this game last year, it was a 3-point game. Because of the Hail Mary at halftime, the Bills were 3-2 and the Jets were 2-3. That game was for, at the time, first place in the division. I mean, I don't know. The Jets season could have gone a lot differently if they had found a way to squeak that one out.
Well, listen, this game is the same, very similarly, because think about it this way, guys. As much as the Bills are 1-0 and everybody else in the division is 0-1, if the Jets beat the Bills, the Bills dropped to 0-3. Dropped to third place automatically in the AFC East, because the Jets would have a head-to-head, and the winner of the Dolphins-Patriots game will have a win and a division win, when the Bills will have a division loss.
Yeah.
So this game swings you from first place to third place in the AFC East.
That's a good point.
Yeah, we don't want to wake up Monday.
If you're the Bills, or for the Jets, I guess from third to first, I guess it could be whatever.
Yeah, you don't want to wake up Monday morning, open the standings, and see them in third, even if it's only week two.
Yeah.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. All right, Sal, so Ed Oliver, this news was kind of out of nowhere, right? Not exactly expected, and perhaps some clarification from Sean McDermott today when he joins you on the Extra Point Show.
Yeah, we'll hope to get some and maybe get a status for him on Sunday. Obviously, he was he was so good. He was tremendous last Sunday against the Ravens. You don't want to miss Ed Oliver. But here's what happened. So Thursday's a normal practice day generally. Then we got word that it would be a walkthrough practice for the Bills. Maybe because they had, a tougher practice on Wednesday, get their legs back under their bodies. It happens sometimes. So we were told to walk through. Media cannot watch a walkthrough practice, but we still get to talk to players after practice like a normal day would be. So that's what happened. We went in yesterday after walkthrough. We go into the locker room to talk to players. First thing I see Ed Oliver, he's playing ping pong and, just playing with one of his teammates. But as I walk by him, I look down and see he has a boot on his left foot. And, okay, well, that's interesting. Now, my colleagues, we all saw the same thing. Now, to me, I'm going to be honest with you, it doesn't immediately raise tons of alarm bells when I see that. It does. It's concerning. But the reason is I've just done this long enough to know that, I've seen guys in walking boots for precautionary measures, right? And if he's standing there playing a little ping pong, I'm not thinking too much about it. Like, wow, that's interesting. Geez, I hope he's okay. I wonder what happened. But he's playing ping pong. And now he's not. I want to give you the picture of what playing ping pong means. As I said yesterday, it's not like he's Jessica Pegula running around, the U.S. Open in baseline to baseline, right? He's standing there, but he's standing up and he's hitting the ball back and forth and he's playing like that. But he's not like running all around the locker room doing it, but he's playing. So you think, okay, well, he's got this on. Well, anyway, after that happens, as soon as he's done, he gets on one of those mini scooters, those scooters, and he elevates his foot, puts his leg up and he rides away. So, somebody asked, well, did you ask him what was going on? And just so everybody knows, and it's a great question. I appreciate the question because I want to tell everybody, when players are playing ping pong, that's their time, right? That's their time with their teammates. And I'm not in the media going to go interrupt them and start talking to them. That's their time. And then when he's done, he gets on the scooter and he goes to a spot, an area where we can't talk. So he kind of just rides away. So it's kind of, everything happened really quick. So we didn't talk to Ed. And then we find out that he was did not participate in practice. So we don't know where that stands right now. We'll find out more from Sean McDermott. But he did practice on Wednesday. He was a full participant on Wednesday because he wasn't on the injury report. I saw him at practice. I have video of him at practice on Wednesday. So something happened between Wednesday and Thursday. I'm not sure what it is, and we don't know the severity of it yet.
Well, we'll find out maybe today. 11 o'clock is about the time McDermott joins you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it could be a little before. Sometimes it could be a little after. So it always just depends on what the schedule is and how things are going down over with him and the Bills and their schedule. So I would just keep listening, and you'll be ready for Sean at any time.
Yeah, and I found that Oliver had a walking boot in 2022 and missed 3 games. So, without knowing the injury, just by wearing that, antenna are up. We'll of course, have the latest.
Sal, if they were to be without Oliver on Sunday, what would that do to, the numbers on game day? Like, who would maybe dress on game day that didn't? And then also what you think the rotation might look like? I would assume more for TJ Sanders.
I would, too. I mean, he's obviously number one backup, I think, to Ed Oliver right now. When you have 4 guys dressing, you'd have Deion Walker as Daquan Jones' main backup. So I would expect TJ Sanders to kind of get the start, but now you're dealing with 3 dressed defensive tackles. So somebody's got to come up from the practice squad. Jordan Phillips, Zion Logue, and Fedarian Mathis. They did sign a guy named Fedarian Mathis earlier this week. He was a former top 50 pick by the Washington Commanders, and that's just a few years ago. And it is kind of, it's just coincidental, really, they signed him, because if you look and say, well, they signed a guy, they must have known he was hurt. No, they signed him on Tuesday, I think it was, or Wednesday morning, and then Ed practiced on Wednesday. So they just signed him because they wanted to have a little more depth and get better, and he was out there. But now, I mean, you might be fortunate if you want to use him, who knows, this quickly. I don't know if that'd be the case. Or Jordan Phillips or Zion Logue. One of them would have to come up because there's no way you're going into a game with only 3 guys at defensive tackle.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. So defensive tackle could be an issue. Sal, looking back on the opener there, if there's no Oliver, you already undermanned, how did you feel like the rookies came out of it, and how did the Bills talk about it? With Deion Walker and TJ Sanders, we've known these two are going to be kind of thrust into those roles, especially with some of the suspensions the Bills have. How what was the scouting report of the review on their play?
I mean, I thought that Deion Walker, TJ Sanders, you know, could have done a better job along with Daquan Jones, pretty much anybody up front, at squeezing gaps and getting Derrick Henry to the ground. But I don't specifically look at one of them and say, oh, my God, he was terrible in that regard. I just think collectively as a unit, they allowed Derrick Henry a little bit too much. Ed Oliver's really the only one who kind of really did get into the backfield, penetrate. And when you think about it this way, guys, he had 6 solo tackles, right? So when I say that, it's like, well, if Ed Oliver's having a really good game, yeah, you want to credit some of his D linemen, that's fine. But like literally, like his tackles were all by himself. It's crazy. I don't know if I've ever seen a defensive lineman with defensive tackle with 6 solo tackles in a game, none assisted. So I think that those guys have to do a better job. They're rookies, they're in their first game, but doesn't mean that they were individually bad at anything specifically they did or the whole game. It just means I think collectively as a D line, what I saw was too many missed tackles right at the point of attack by the D-line. So I think they're going to have to be a little bit better there. And that includes the defensive ends, by the way. You can't allow Breece Hall, in this case, Derrick Henry last week, to get through the first wave of defenders, because then it becomes an issue, because you have Derrick Henry running against guys where he's a lot bigger than, he's got a full head of steam. And we talk about the linebackers, we talk about the safeties, but it's got to start up front.
Sal, with Tre'Davious White getting a couple of practices in, do you think that it's tracking towards him being available to them Sunday? And if he is, do you think he starts? Like, if he's active, he's on the field. One game from Dorian Strong that went, I think, okay, isn't enough to unseat Trey White?
No. I mean, I don't see that right now. If Tre'Davious White's playing, he's starting. That's the way I look at it. He's the starter. I don't think the Bills are suddenly like, oh, my God, look at the rookie. He was really good. It's not. I mean, he did. He played fine. There's no doubt about that. But Tre'Davious White's the starter. I think it would have to take multiple weeks of Tre'Davious White not playing well. And not even if Dorian Strong looks really good. To me, this is Tre'Davious White. I hate saying job to lose, but I think he'd have to kind of lose it, right? Where you're like, oh my God, like we got to do something different here. If that's not the case, I don't think you're putting Dorian Strong on defense in place of Tre'Davious White. So it was good to see Tre'Davious White 2 days in a row. He was limited both days, but that's trending well. You know, he wouldn't give an answer when asked, you know, what he thinks about Sunday. He's not going to do that. But the way he's talking, the way it's looking on the injury report, I'm very encouraged that he could be available for the Bills on Sunday.
The Jets receiving corps, it's very much a one-man show. Like, it's Garrett Wilson, and then there's really not much else after that. And Josh Reynolds, who starts, might not even play on Sunday. Is there any... The Bills don't really use Christian Benford like as a shadow corner, right? Like, they do not follow him around. I don't know what they did with him on Sunday against Baltimore, but has there been any even question about like whether they'll start doing that with him this year, given that the other position's a little bit in flux?
I wonder too, Joe. I don't know. Especially with a team like this, where if you look at the Jets last week, I don't know if you looked at the Jets, you see the Jets like stats last week, yeah, the targets and all that. I mean, it was pretty much Garrett Wilson and then nothing else, right? I mean, I think he had 9 and then the next closest had 2. As far as catches are concerned, let's see. I got to bring it up right now. 9 targets, Breece Hall 4, and then after that, 2, 3, 2. Josh Reynolds with 3, and he might not play, like you said. Like, that's it. It's Garrett Wilson as a wide receiver getting yeah, targets here.
So they had 5 total targets for all the other receivers, wide receivers combined in that game.
Yeah. So I do wonder if they would do that with Christian Benford, and I do think it would be on a game-by-game basis, right? Like, depending on who your opponent is and receivers. And Garrett Wilson is a lot of what they do, you know, throwing the ball. So we'll see. You know, you might just feel comfortable, hey, we got Tre'Davious White, we got Christian Benford. Wherever he lines up, we're going to just go and we're going to play football. And I think the Bills, that's their general philosophy that we've seen over the years. But I do wonder if they do something like that with Christian Benford now in his 4th year, getting a contract, showing that he is that type of cornerback that they could rely on to, you know, be a true number one.
Talking about the Bills matchup in New York with the Jets, getting through some of those injuries, and that's, of course, the Barnes Firm Injury Report, brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Injured? For help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. Sal, one thing the afternoon guys were talking about yesterday I found interesting. Can you remember a time when the Bills and the Jets were both good? You guys were mentioning the game last year where kind of the Jets are 2-3, they're a game back. Because I can say I've been watching and covering the Bills for quite a long time. They've never been good, I want to say, in my lifetime together. The 90s, mm-hmm, maybe. But, you know, I'm not really keyed in at that time.
But not the early 90s, right, Sal?
It's been forever since the two of them were good at the same time.
Yeah, and listen, when I grew up, the first playoff game I ever remember for the Bills was against the Jets. It was a wild card game, 1981, and the Bills had a real big lead early in the game. The Jets came storming back. Bills win the game late. A lot of the OGs out there listening, because we're getting older now. Bill Simpson with the interception over the middle. Richard Todd trying to hit Wesley Walker. I remember it vividly. It was so long ago, guys. The Jets were playing at Shea Stadium at the time. Wow. Okay.
Okay.
So anyway, that's and then from there, then the Bills progressively they got bad in the mid 80s, and the Jets weren't that bad at all. And in fact, there was a game in 1986. Where the famous drive from John Elway against the Browns, the week before that, the Jets played the Browns, and it went to overtime. And if the Jets wind up winning that game, you don't get Elway against the Browns that year in 86. So the Jets were good then in the late 80s, and then the Bills come along, and they become a lot better than the Jets in the early 90s. They go to the Super Bowls. The Jets aren't that good. And then it kind of flips a little bit for a little while. And then for a hot minute maybe for late 90s, both teams kind of had their moments against each other, but they weren't like really good. But they had a few battles there, if I remember correctly, and I have to go back and look. But and then I remember early 2000s when the Bills were in their drought, but they had a few times where they started off hot, and it looked like it was going well. And I remember when LaDainian Tomlinson came to Buffalo with the Jets, and the Bills had that nice start 1 year. Maybe it was 2011, actually, if I remember right. Maybe it was after that year, and.
Yeah,
the Bills and the Jets came in and they beat the Bills, and that was Rex Ryan, I think, coaching the Jets, right? But that's about as close as you get. And it's funny to think about now how we were here in Buffalo in a 17-year playoff drought, and now it's overlapping with, and the Jets had made playoffs during that time. They'd made two AFC championship games, and now the Jets are in a 14-year playoff drought.
And the Bills have made two AFC championship games. Yeah. And there was a game in the middle there where the Jets could have had a lot shorter of a playoff drought because Fitzpatrick had a chance to make the playoffs here. Like, that's for them, that's probably the most important game they've played during the drought, right? Like, that's a win and you're in the playoffs, and Fitz comes here and what he throws, four picks? Like, it wasn't a good game for him.
I saw something the other day where he was on a podcast with somebody, and I apologize for who I know who it was, but he said he was asked, is there a throw in your career, a play in your career you want back? And he talked about Leotis McKelvin picking him off in that game when he tried to hit Eric Decker, and like that was something he shouldn't have thrown that ball, and if he doesn't throw that ball, maybe the Jets make the playoffs.
Right. Is that the one at the – I'm trying to remember. I'm at that game. At the end of the half, maybe, he threw a pick. I don't remember. There was a big, important interception by McKelvin, though.
I thought I remembered that game to be a blowout, but it was not. It was 22-17. Like, the Jets were in that game.
No, they were in it. Yeah.
And they finished. Yeah. Here's the other thing. They finished 10-6.
And missed.
And missed. Right? The Bills' drought.
Well, there was only six playoff teams then.
But still, the Bills' drought, for most of it, they never had a 10-win season.
No.
And here the Jets actually had a 10-win season and didn't make it.
Yeah, here it was second.
What year was this again?
2015.
15.
It was
right.
Second and 10. They were down by the Jets were down 19-17. They're down two. They have second and 10 on the Bills' 14-yard line.
Oof.
And Fitz throws a pick to McKelvin.
You can understand why he'd want that back, right?
Yeah. Like, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
Oof. And then
I'm looking now in 2015. They did get the 7 seed. They would have made it with the implementation because they were two games clear of the Bills at 8-8.
So
the 8th seed.
The final three, man, this has got to be tough for Fitz. The final three drives of that game. You win and you go to the playoffs. This is a quarterback who never made the playoffs, by the way. He throws that pick to McKelvin down two. He gets the ball back down five. And with 2 minutes left on 3rd and 9, down five, he throws a pick to Manny Lawson. And then you think, okay, game over, right? Nope. Defense gets him the ball back. Down five. There's 44 seconds left. Interception to A.J. Tarpley.
Knowing what we know now, if you could give Fitz that win.
Three picks to end the game.
Would you give him that win?
That'd be tough. I don't know.
You know, we're all happy now. We're in a good place. Fitz loves
it. It's not about Fitz. It's about the Jets having a playoff drought.
I know.
If I could magically get Fitz into the playoffs somewhere else in his career, I would do that instead.
Okay.
It would still be a 10-year. I think I'm with Sal, though. I don't want the Jets. That was, you know, I had never really lived life before. That was a great day in the stadium.
It was amazing.
That was a great day in the stadium. You capped a team out that you hated, or at least didn't like. So, no, I wouldn't trade that day for Sorry, Fitz.
Real quick before I go, did you guys see, I tweeted out a piece of an article I read this morning from Dan Shaughnessy. And there was the article is basically about, and it's true, and it's funny to say, and you're like, come on, what are we doing? But it's true, because I thought, man, this is what we did with the Bills for how many years? And the article is basically, and what he writes is, very quickly, fair or unfair, it feels like every Patriots game now is a referendum on second-year quarterback Drake May. Man, were we there how many times on a second-year quarterback? It doesn't matter what you think about him, how good he was his rookie year. That's exactly right. It's true.
We sat here
for every quarterback, including Josh Allen, and by the time you get to his second year, you're like, everything's about the quarterback. It doesn't matter. How good is he?
Well, we were one of two things. We were either that, or we're where the Jets are now, Sal, who is like guy on his third team, and he has a good game.
Right.
We're like, oh, maybe this is the guy, even though he's been discarded by like three other teams.
That's right. But anyway, I thought that was really interesting this morning, that was the article written by Dan Shaughnessy over at, what is it, the Boston Globe, I believe.
Yep.
It is. So, yeah.
Yeah, that Patriots-Dolphins game, big implications. Somebody's going to be 0-2, and
yeah.
I think it's a problem for either team. The Patriots are supposed to have a good season here, and the Dolphins are trying to pull it together and making changes to their offensive line like the Dolphins are.
And they're at the Bills 4 days later.
Yeah,
so.
right. It's going to be tough. All right, Sal, we'll be listening today for Sean McDermott, the update on Ed Oliver.
All right, you got it, guys. Thanks.
Sal Capaccio, he is joined by Sean McDermott right around, you know, sometimes between 10:45, 11:15, that neighborhood on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. 803-0550 is our phone number. It is a football Friday. Last night we saw the Packers look really good. They beat the Commanders, who all of a sudden, you know how it works. Sal's saying it here about first and second year quarterbacks. What's Jaden Daniels? Ah, regression. Now there's regression from Jaden Daniels. I didn't think he looked that bad in this game. He was under duress.
I saw statistically, like by every metric, it was his worst game of his career, but it was, how much of it was because every play there were two Packers in his face.
Sure.
Like immediately.
And if that's the worst game of your career, you're doing okay.
Right.
It wasn't that bad.
Like, I know fantasy isn't the measure of this, but it was the worst game of his career. He had 20 fantasy points.
Wait, 200 yards, two touchdowns, no picks.
You know, all right.
Sorry. That's my worst
game.
Yeah,
it wasn't really that bad.
Yeah,
like, from him.
Meanwhile, Justin Fields has that game, and it's like, you know what? We might be getting something here. 200 yards, two touchdowns. Anyway, 803-0550. Back in a snap. It's brought to you by Snapdragon Apples, the official apple of the Buffalo Bills. You can give us a ring. Give us a prediction on this game. Which player do you want to see something from? Which unit, position group? Whatever you're looking for. Bills Jets, Sunday, 1 o'clock. You can hear it, of course, here on WGR.
The weather. I think summer and fall here are elite. I think winters can be brutal. But yeah, the weather actually here is pretty dang good.
That's Josh Allen, Bills superstar. Oh, what did he say there? He said fall's elite.
Fall is elite.
That's right. He knows what's up. It's elite right now. The forecast is the same every day until I'll let you know when it's going to change.
Beautiful.
78, 77, 77, 72. 5, 80, 82, 81, 80. Beautiful. Cool at night.
Will this be a Sunday backyard patio watch game?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because
it's going to be during the day.
Yeah. There is a watch party you can watch that benefits a couple of good causes. So I'm going to find the information on that and get it to you, because I want to do that. We'll take a call while I search my emails to see if I can locate this. But in partnership with Dion's Dreamers, it's at like the Richardson Complex on the lawn.
Right. Yeah,
be food trucks, and here we go. I've got it. I pulled it up. So, yeah, Sunday 1 o'clock. It's a free Community Bills watch party. It'll be from 11 to 5, Richardson Olmsted Campus. It's in partnership with Dia Dawkins and Dion's Dreamers. Open to families, kids, dogs welcome as well. Get there. Food trucks. Lots of stuff going on. Family friendly. So if you want to be outside and watch it with a lot of people, that's Sunday for this game at the Richardson Complex. So go outside, get a blanket, watch a game, big screen. Also, Bulldog pointed out, I saw on his Twitter, this is this weekend is Borderlands, which is Knox Farm, which is a super fun festival, great concert. That last year they had a game on the big screen on Sunday. So there'll be a spot to, if you're going to be at Borderlands, watch the game from there.
All right.
Patio football season.
Watch a Bills game at a festival. Never done that before. Probably be fun.
It's the weirdest place.
A lot of people.
It's the weirdest place you've ever watched a game. Let's do that. Strangest place you ever watched a Bills game or a major sporting event?
A golf course in Arizona.
Just like on your phone driving 3 years.
It actually was a Bills-Jets game. It was the Bills-Jets game in New York that was like only field goals. It was an Allen game.
Yeah.
Maybe there was no touchdowns in that game. Maybe that's the weirdest. It's the weirdest other place.
I watched the Colts-Bills playoff game at a Chili's in Niagara Falls. My friends and I were trying to get home, and we didn't get home in time, so we were just like, let's just find somewhere. We went into a Chili's.
I watched the Bills-Patriots finale 2 years ago at a wedding.
Okay.
I used to go, when I was living in Albuquerque, I would go watch the games at the Bills backer bar completely alone because none of my teammates wanted to go with me because I was too crazy about the game. So they were like, we can't go watch football with you.
At least there were other Bills
fans. There were other Bills fans, right?
Yeah. There were. That's cool. It was awesome. But I would just be sitting at a table alone freaking out the whole time. It was really quite something.
You know what would be a good thing to do, a fun whatever, a little YouTube reality show is that every time the Bills are home, you go on the road to a Bills backers bar. Ooh. And wherever you are, just, you know, I'm gonna go and watch it in Denver this week. I'm gonna go watch it in Carolina this week. So you go where the Bills aren't and watch it in a Bills.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Backers bar,
that would be cool. The one in Albuquerque was awesome. There was a big group of people. Raffles like every week. Bingo. It was awesome.
I don't know if I watched a Bills game in a Bills backer bar or a Sabres game in a Sabres and Bills backer bar, but there's a big one in Denver, and I've been to that one.
Okay,
yeah. Maybe the Bills had played the day or a couple days before, and they said that they ran out of blue light in the first quarter.
that happened in Nashville a couple times.
They're not prepared.
Yeah.
Is there one in every state? Or
sure,
have we not
definitely
gotten to that
every
point
state
yet?
For sure. For
yeah,
sure. We'll be approaching every city.
Yeah,
there's a lot. There's a lot. There's so. I mean, isn't there one in Italy? Sal knows. Doesn't Sal know
there's
a guy?
There's a group in Italy. I don't know if they have a specific place they go to. Do they have bars in Italy? Yeah, they
isn't
have
there a Bills backers group in Peru too or something? I feel like
sure.
There's one in Australia. They follow me on Twitter. Shout out Bills backers Australia.
Yeah, I follow with the Italy account.
My cousin,
they're everywhere.
My cousins in Australia are converted Bills fans. Don't forget, the Bills could play the Rams next year. Same place AFC West or NFC West finisher. We need the Rams to win that division if they're going to go to Australia.
Can we talk about that game maybe, meaning the Wednesday week one game?
Yeah, they probably aren't going to Australia. Steve in Texas. Hey, Steve, good morning. Happy Football Friday, Steve.
Hey, thanks. Good morning, guys. I'm hoping to maybe see something out of Shavers this game, just kind of basking in that afterglow of the preseason. And, you know, it was a big deal for a lot of people to see that guy make the roster. And, you know, I don't know if he's even going to be active for this game, if they're going to, you know, have Curtis Samuel up instead. But I think this game has a little potential where maybe it kind of gets away from the Jets in the back of the third quarter. And just for the sake of seeing it, I'd like to see him kind of pop off and, you know, do something for us.
Well, he averages 69 yards per catch against the Jets. One catch, 69 yards and a touchdown.
You know, like, one, I don't think he's competing with Curtis Samuel because Shavers plays special teams, and I don't think there's another receiver that could take that from him. I don't think it's Samuel. And I think he did on Sunday the thing you might expect him to. Like, him making a difference. His making a difference, I don't think, is the same as Josh Palmer or Keon Coleman. I don't think Tyrell Shavers is going to go out there in a game and catch seven passes. But what do you do on Sunday? He played 17 snaps on offense. He blocked 11 times. I saw a couple clips where he ran his corner out of bounds. I think that's probably the extent of his job, unless there would be an injury above him. So that I think is fair to expect. If you're thinking he's going to catch five passes in a game, I don't think that's in the cards.
Could Samuel be active? I mean,
if he is, I think Moore is inactive.
No.
Right? Is it just those two?
Was anybody unhappy with Elijah Moore in the Raven game? Did he?
He played. He did the stuff that Samuel did. He did the orbit motion.
He got a carry.
He got it right. There was a jet sweep to him. I think they tried to set up a screen to him. It looked like he played the Samuel role. He didn't really get the ball. Well, that's kind of like Samuel from last year. That's different, though, than what he was used like in Cleveland.
He got 66. No, he got 100 targets.
100 targets, 100 and he's just he's running routes.
Down the field. The idea.
Yeah, he was not running down the field.
I'll tell you, it's another thing with this offense a little bit where the vertical threats. They're going to take shots downfield. In the Baltimore game, they started passing downfield once they're down. But is this a game where you could see a shot play on the first possession? A shot play to Elijah Moore or Josh Palmer, somebody. It's whoever's not being covered by Sauce Gardner. Gardner, so he made comments this week. This is the opposite of bulletin board material, where you praise the other player.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, I don't know, come up with a term for that if you want. Gardner, when talking about Allen, said, it's always a battle, Josh Allen. Obviously, I don't really enjoy it. As a corner, you never really enjoy playing against running quarterbacks or quarterbacks that are capable of using their legs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I know he's a competitor. He's a guy. You know, we're very aware of that. The thing I know about Sauce Gardner is he picked up golf and became a 5 handicap in like a year. So because
so
of that,
anything he does, you I would hate be
him.
Impressed.
I hate him for that. Right? Didn't he just decide to start golfing and
he did,
he's good?
And he's really good.
That's so annoying.
Yeah. That Poyer did that.
Also,
like 5 years ago, Jordan Poyer, I think, just decided, I'm going to start golfing. And he became, I think he's way better than like I am, who's been playing for like 15, 20 years. So
people just pick up the clubs and they're like, wow, this isn't that hard.
Yeah, it seems unfair. I'm watching very quickly.
I'm wrong. Maybe he did not become a 5 handicap, but whatever.
NFL Pro has the function that's very easy where you can just plug the guy's name in and it'll immediately pull up all their plays from a game. So Elijah Moore played 12 plays. I'm watching all the routes he ran very quickly, and everything was around the line of scrimmage except for two times. Two times he ran down the field, and one was a double move that it looked like Allen wanted him.
Okay.
But he wasn't open. So maybe there was one play where, like, going in it was, oh, we're gonna hit Elijah Moore deep here, and the corner didn't bite on it at all. So, but otherwise it was all short. Like, he was not running routes down the field otherwise.
Which is kind of the offense in the first half of that game.
Yeah, right.
What does everybody think of the Packers' white helmets and white uniforms?
I like them. I don't need them to wear them often, but they're fine, right?
Yeah, I like them.
They're fine. I actually don't have a very strong opinion on them one way or the other. I don't think they're bad. I don't think they should probably wear them more than like once or twice a year.
803-0550. We might have a new segment here, which is, tell us the strangest place. Who can win this? Jeff, I watched the Bills-Patriots game at the end of 2021 on my phone on a Nile cruise in Egypt.
Wow.
All right.
Egypt.
That's a good one.
Yeah, we had another person on Twitter say Cairo, Egypt, and Rio. Thanksgiving. Rio for Thanksgiving.
I think what my answer is for this. Other than
I know, I feel like I gotta have a good
at a wedding so during speeches games. Watching a horse race. But that's everybody now. Everybody who hasn't watched a sporting event at a wedding.
Right.
You know? Like on your phone, just quietly.
See, that Bills Patriots game, what worked out a couple years ago for me was the ceremony was before the game began or like right as the game was beginning, and then the wedding party went to go take pictures or whatever. Like so there was like a 2-3 hour break in the middle. So everybody just hung around at the bar and watched the game. So it really wasn't really that doesn't count. I didn't really watch the game at a wedding. I watched the game at a bar. I just happened to be wearing a suit.
Sure. Who's watched the game at a funeral? Show yourself. Come on.
You've done that?
I'm just asking. No, I don't think I have. I don't think so.
I haven't done that. No.
Somebody has. It's timing.
Yeah, somebody has.
Anyway, 803-0550, our phone number. Chris Brown joins us at the 8:30 segment. We're waiting on Sean McDermott. Join Sal 11 o'clock today to get the story on Ed Oliver and how serious that injury might be as he was seen in a walking boot yesterday. It's coming up. Jeremy and Joe, your calls when we return here on WGR. Happy Football Friday. Jeremy and Joe and Barnes Firm Injury Report brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Injured for help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. The biggest name on that injury report, we don't really know the deal yet. It's Ed Oliver. He missed practice. Foot in a walking boot. Uh-oh. Sean McDermott to update us later today.
You know how once in a while you'll get like the crazy, hey, why doesn't Josh Allen play linebacker type of question? Or wasn't this hockey, Ristolainen, they tried to make him a forward like a million times. Yesterday I got the, why didn't they just put Ed Oliver at linebacker against the Ravens? I got that question.
All right.
I feel like he's fast.
He would have trouble covering tight ends.
Yeah.
And receivers. I feel like the coverage would be the biggest concern probably. I would have.
I mean, yeah.
Anyway.
That feels like
just a knee-jerk reaction on that idea.
Yeah.
What else? Let's get a call in here. Eric and Elma. Hey, Eric, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. So my question's about Palmer, and just wondering what you guys think the Bills' vision is for him. You know, I had an argument with my buddy before the season started, and I was thinking, you know, Palmer's going to be somewhere in the ballpark of, like, you know, 400 or 500 yards. And my buddy's thinking, like, more like 600 or 700, maybe an 800 yards for the season. And the first game, you know, really kind of strengthened my buddy's argument. So I was wondering what you guys think the vision is for him.
It's a good question.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I never really know what to do with what will the target share look like. Because we're one game in, and Keon Coleman had a monster game, and it almost all happened in the fourth quarter because they were down double digits.
Right.
So
I
don't
know. They threw the ball way more than you would expect them to in an average game.
Will that be the most passing attempts Allen has in the season in a single game? It really might be.
It's possible.
Or will the defense be bad every week and they're in shootouts? So, Palmer, if you're arguing production, part of it's going to be how the rest of the season goes. And if their defense is a mess and is hurt all the time, then they might need 35 a game.
I'll say this. I liked him more playing out there on the field than I liked Matt Collins last year.
Yes.
Right? Like, he seemed like he was getting open a little bit. I don't think he was incredible, but there were a couple of routes. The one on the last drive, of course, I think was his best of the day. He had a couple over the middle. Like, he looked like a professional NFL wide receiver to me. So, I think 4 catches a game feels like an appropriate expectation for him. Right, you know, Allen threw the ball against the Ravens 46 times. You don't want to know what his high was last year in a game? 40. So he only got to 40 once, and on week one he went to 46. In fact, it was the most pass attempts for Allen in a game since overtime against the Eagles, and he had a bunch in overtime. The last regulation game he had 46 attempts. The Miami game where it's 1,000 degrees. You remember the number on that?
49 attempts?
No, 63.
Oh, wow.
His arm fell off by the end of the game is really what happened in that one.
803-0550. Meanwhile, Josh Palmer, don't forget, the other thing he did was ask teammates, when are we going to start opening this thing up? And I just want him to carry that energy right into every meeting. Yeah, that's right. Be the guy that says, you know, we should probably throw it more. What do you say, guys? We'll see about Palmer. 803-0550. Thanks for the phone call. If you want to join us, it's Football Friday. Wide open phones. When we get back, we've also discovered a new favorite press conference character in football.
Yes.
A coordinator will soon become a star because of how he approaches press conferences. It's coming up here on WGR.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.